Today is a not in the Gemara topic, but a special topic, as we often do on days when a lot of people are away. And it was sort of at the request of someone who's not here, who shall go unmentioned on the tape but knows who he is, who wanted to know more about this particular topic. Are there any Kohanim here at the moment?
Yes.
You are a Kohen?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't going to say anything to insult Kohanim, but okay. But this is a topic that is specific to Kohanim. And one might say that in this, the question that was asked was about what disqualifies a Kohen, really, I think, from Duchening. And there are really three different kinds of Aveir. Yes?
Does that apply to getting Kohen Aliyah as well?
So we can talk about really two different kinds of three things. Firstly, three different kinds of Aveiros. Number one, three different kinds of sins. And number two, three different kinds of things that a Kohen would want to be able to do. Starting with, number one, doing service in the Beis HaMikdash, doing Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. And there, one has to distinguish, as the Mishnah does, between actually performing Avodah versus just eating from the Karbanos. In other words, a Kohen has two roles. Number one is he does, there are certain things that only a Kohen can do. Only a Kohen can receive the blood of the animal. Anybody can shech the animal. But once you shech the animal, receiving the blood, throwing it on the Mizbeach, burning the limbs or the fats, whatever gets burned on the Mizbeach, that must be done by a Kohen. So that's what we would call Sherus. Service, but there is also another form of service in the Mikdash, but it's not quite as much service, and it doesn't have the same restrictions, which is to eat from the Karbanos. So many Karbanos, some Karbanos can only be eaten by a Kohen, like a Karban Chatas, a Karban Ashram, a sin offering, a guilt offering, and there are parts of a Karban Shlamim, the peace offering, which only parts, which can be eaten only by a Kohen. So those things... So those things do not have the same restrictions as Sherus. For example, a Balmum, a Kohen who has a blemish, who's disqualified from doing the Avodah, from doing actual ministering and serving, he is allowed to eat. He is allowed to eat from the Karbanos. He does receive a portion. He's just not allowed to do the Avodah. So that's one area, is service in the Beis HaMikdash. The second area is Nisiyas Kapayim, is Duchening. And the third area would be, again, there are more than this, but the three that really come up in a discussion would be receiving the first aliyah. Receiving the first aliyah that a Kohen receives is a function of, there are really two different practices. On Shabbos, it's a function of, well, I should say, it's a function of Darkei Shalom. It's a function of, let's read two things. One is Darkei Shalom, keeping the peace. The other is the notion of Vekidashto, and that's the one that's of interest to us, which is Vekidashto, Liftoach Rishon, Levarech Rishon. There's a mitzvah to give a Kohen the first aliyah if you're at a meal. Doesn't mean if you're not, we don't typically have this, because typically you have a balabayis. Someone is the balabayis, and the balabayis decides who gets the bench. But if you have a group of people who just sit down, like this morning, for example, and you have a mezuman, so Mr. Arf is the one who's supposed to be offered at the bench first, because it's nobody's balabayis, and therefore a group of people sit together, the kidashto applies to the kohen, liftoach rishon or levarech rishon. Again, in your house, you invite him over for a Shabbos meal, you as the balabas get to decide whoever should do what. But in a setting where it's a group of people without one person who's a balabayis, so that's what the mitzvah of a kidashto is, treating the kohen with the kedusha. It comes with responsibilities that the kohen has because of kedusha, who he can and can't marry, what he can and can't come in contact with, and so on and so forth. But the kedusha also means that you have to treat him as possessing that kedusha. So those are sort of the three areas: mikdash, duchening, and let's say first aliyah. There are three kinds of averos. The first kind of avera would be something that is not unique to kohanim and has no effect actually on the ability of the kohen to duchen. In other words, the Kohen eats a chazir. The Kohen wears shatnez. The Kohen doesn't put on tefillin. So all of those things, as we'll see, don't really technically disqualify the Kohen at all. And while you might not like such a Kohen, and you might wonder what good does it do him blessing you, so the Yerushalmi, as we'll see, already addresses that question, which is that he's not the one blessing you, God is the one blessing you, whereas the Rambam puts it in a different way, just because the Kohen eats chazer and wears shatnez and doesn't put on tefillin, why should he be mevatel another mitzvah of not doing birchas kohanim, right? A Kohen who's in shul, when they're doing birchas kohanim and fails to go up, so he's mevatel, the Rambam says, three mitzvahs hasa. So he says, why would we say to such a person, lahosh the rishah al rishasa, why should you do another avera? Okay. So that's one area, things that have no connection to kahuna and no impact upon kahuna. A second area are things that are specific to isurei kahuna. There are two examples that will come up, we'll see. Number one, if a kohen marries a woman whom he's not allowed to marry, he marries a grusha. So what is his status while he's married to the grusha? Or a kohen who's metame lemesim, he likes to go to cemeteries, he's got a thing for, you know, he's got a fetish for going to cemeteries, even though he's not allowed to. So what is the status of the kohen there? And then the third area is actually two very specific prohibitions that are mentioned in one context or another, one of which we saw in the previous weeks when we were learning our topic in Avodah Zarah, is Avodah Zarah. A Kohen, we saw the case of a Kohen who served in the house of on Temple of Onias. So the Gemara, as we'll see, had the Mishnah has a dispute. Is the Temple of Onias, is that a base of Avodah Zarah, or is it just Shchutei Chutz? But certainly, the Mishnah says a Kohen who served there is disqualified. Certainly, if he had done Avodah Zarah, he's disqualified. So that's one disqualification. And the other is the question of a Kohen who has murdered someone. And each one of these comes up in one context, and we'll see the Gemara Brachos that talks about Kohen who's done murder is not Duchening. The reason for that, as the Gemara will say, is pretty obvious, which is the Kohen conveys blessing through his hands, but his hands that are full of blood, Yidechem Damim Aleo, the Pasuk Yishai says, it somehow, we say, Ein Kategor Nase Sanegor, right? The accuser, the evidence of the crime, the guilt, cannot become the defense. So in this case, to have the Kohen stretching out his hands to give blessing, you know, rather you see blood oozing out of his hands rather than blessing oozing out of his hands. So let's start first. So the question of one of the questions we have to deal with is, how do you draw connections between the areas? In other words, we're going to see that when it comes to duchening, the Gemara doesn't say anything about a Kohen who apostatized or a Kohen who worshipped Avodah Zarah, either one. They might be one and the same. The Gemara doesn't talk about him being disqualified from duchening. It talks about him being disqualified from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. On the other hand, when it comes to murder, it doesn't say anything about such a Kohen not serving the Mikdash. It only says that he can't give the blessing. So the question is, how do you transfer from one area to the other? So let's, the starting point in the discussion is a pasuk, which they're actually two pasukim. I only cited one. They're essentially make the same juxtaposition, the same comparison. This one's a pasuk in Parashas Ekev. In the Parashah of Egla Rufa, you have a very similar pasuk. And the Torah says the following. It's the first source. But Esahi Hivdil Hashem Hashemet HaLevi Laseses Aron Bris Hashem Lamod Lefnei Hashem L'Shar Sol Varech B'Shemar Yom Hazeh. At that time, God set aside the tribe of Levi to carry the Ark of the Covenant, and to stand before God to minister and to bless in His name up until this day. So here, the Pasuk, the Torah, has put linked next to one another two things. Number one, Sheirus, the service, which we talk about, doing the Avodah, handling the Karbanos and so on. And the other is Bracha. And the truth is, as I said, this is repeated in Egla Rufa. There, when the Torah happens to describe why the Kohanim are handling the Egla Rufa, so the Torah also just mentions that these two roles, Sheirus, service, ministering, and Bracha. And if you think about it, in Parsha Shemini, on the first day, you know, of regular Karbanos, in effect, on the eighth day, so there, part of what Aaron does, he brings the Karbanos, and then Aaron descends from the Mizbeach and to the people, Vayivarachem. Vayisaron Sedam Elam Vayivarachem, Vayered Me'asar Sachatas Vayalashlamim. That Aaron, as part of the Sheiris, as part of the ministering, he actually also does Bracha, which I presume to be Birchas Kohanim. So it almost seems as if that bracha, and the Gemara does state this in Tainis, is a form of sheirus. It's a form of ministering. And I mean, for us, we still have Birchas Kohanim in Eretz Yisrael in a very limited way, but we only do it on Yom Tov, but in Eretz Yisrael, they duchen every day by Shachris, and on fast days by Mincha, and Yom Kippur by Ne'ilah as well, and Musaf, of course. Even though it is a mitzvah that's outside the Mikdash, its primary locus is actually in the Beis HaMikdash itself. The Gemara talks about differences between Birchas Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash and Birchas Kohanim outside the Mikdash. And in an interesting way, one might draw an analogy. Birchas Kohanim is Middaoraisa. It is scriptural, both in the Mikdash and out of the Mikdash. But so is taking of the Lulav. Lulav on the first day of Sukkot is a mitzvah to take in the Mikdash and a mitzvah to take outside the Mikdash. But when you look at the Rambam's formulation in his headings to Hilchos, Shofar, Sukkah, and Lulav, the Rambam writes that mitzvah, litol, Lulav, Bamikdash Kol Shiva. he doesn't mention in his koteret, in his heading to the thing, there's also a mitzvah the first day outside of the mikdash. Because it's almost, even though it's midah oraisa, it's almost secondary to the mitzvah in the mikdash, and birchas kohanim might be something very similar. In other words, we have birchas kohanim outside the mikdash, although we have differences. For example, in the mikdash, they used to use the Shem HaMeforash, the Tetragrammaton, and outside the Mikdash, where we use the Kinoi, what we use, you know, Yudke Vavke, the way we pronounce Yudke Vavke, the Shem Adnus, Adonai, but that in the Mikdash, they would actually pronounce the Shem HaMeforash, the ineffable name. And so there seems to be an aspect of Birchas Kohanim, which really is Avoda in the Mikdash. Now we have two Psukim in Tanakh that address Kohanim one is explicit, the other is really not, who have sinned in the context of service. So in Malachim, and this pasuk was quoted, I think, or alluded to in our Gemara, Ach lo yalu kohanei habamos el mizbach Hashem biYerushalayim, ki im achlu matzos besoch acheihem. So even though they accepted the people doing tshuva, the Kohanim of the Bamos, and the Bamos for the most part, remember, were probably not idolatrous. The Torah in Sefer Dvarim and in Sefer Vayikra demands centralized worship. But the Jewish people seem not to have been so keen on that through a good part of the First Temple period. Now, centralized worship was only mandatory when you had a central place of worship, Mishkan Shiloh, and then later there was an interregnum, there was a period, an interim period in between when there was no fixed place, where the Mishkan floated around, or there was Mizbeach in Nov and in Givon, but then you were allowed to bring a carbon in your backyard, and then once the Beis HaMikdash was built, then was a permanent ban on bringing any carbon outside of the temple precincts. But nonetheless, that, you know, the fact that the rabbis say something or the Torah says something doesn't mean that the Jews always obey. That's just a matter of Jewish history. Nothing has changed. So in this case, the Navi says that the Kohanim who had ministered on the Bamos were not allowed to go up on the Mizbeach in Yerushalayim. I mean, they couldn't minister the full ministering, but ki machlu matzos besoch achehem. They were allowed to eat matzos, that would be from a karban mincha. They were allowed to eat of the karbanos that only a Kohen can eat of amongst their brethren, who Kohanim. In other words, they would disqualified from serving, but they did not lose their kedushas kahuna, their sanctity of being priests, and therefore they could eat from the karbanos that only kohanim were allowed to eat from. So that is the only source that we have that's explicit in Tanakh in any way disqualifying a kohen from some aspect of kahuna on a permanent basis, even though ostensibly he has repented, he has done tshuva. The pasuk in Yeshaya speaks as follows. This is in the Haftorah of Chazon, it's the first chapter. And God says to the Jewish people, "Uvafarischem kapechem alimei naimikem." When you spread your hands forth, I will avert my eyes. Kis gam kisarbus filai neni shomea. Even when you are marbe, when you pray very much, I am not listening. Yedeichem damim aleihem. Your hands are full of blood. Now, lefi pshuto shel mikra, the simple meaning of the text, this has nothing to do with kohanim duchening. There are two modes of hands that are put out. Once upon a time. Today, Jews don't pray like this anymore, perhaps for the most part because Christians pray like this. But these are the two modes, one and two. This mode is a supplicant. This is someone coming and asking and begging. That's how you daven. So Jews don't daven that way anymore, perhaps because maybe it was taken over by Christians as a form of prayer. But in theory, this is the mode of prayer. You come as a humble supplicant asking from God. That's, in other words, the divine blessing comes this way. When a Kohen duchens, he doesn't put his hands out like that, right? I've never seen a Kohen duchen. I'm always looking away. I know I won't really burn my eyes. And one time I'm almost tempted because I want to see what are the Kohanim actually doing? What's the minute? But I don't. So I'm going to trust you. Okay, but Kohanim are supposed to duchen like this because it's the opposite direction. In other words, the bracha is emanating from their hands upon the kehila. So, but nonetheless, even though farischem kapechem here, the pshat is this, so the Gemara in Brachos is going to darshan it differently. We'll see that in a few minutes. Okay. So anyway, you cover your hands with the talus, right?
Yes.
Right. There were different minhagim on that. So the truth is, once the kohanim cover their hands with the talus, it shouldn't be a problem looking anyway, right? Because the shechina will be covered. So in the shechina and the mikdash. So, but we don't look anyway.
But you saw it in the space program where they had Star Wars.
Oh, supposedly the splinter thing. I wasn't a Star Trek fan. I never searched Star Trek. I'm sorry to, you know, if I disappoint anybody in that.
I'm not going to tell you what happens, but I refer to that.
Yeah, I think there's something about splitting of the fingers or something like that. Okay.
He's Jewish guy.
Okay.
Nemo.
I'm sorry, what was the question? Back to our real topic, yes.
How do we know that Yeshayahu refers here to the Kohanim?
It's not, I'll peep shot, it's not. Al Pipshad, it's about, I said, Pshuta Shamikra, it's about prayer, and there's nothing to do, it's not Kohanim specifically. There are Karbonos in this context. In other words, the preceding Pasuk is, I believe, Lama li rov zivchechem yomar Hashem savati, olo selim vichayim vedam parim uchvasimatu lo chafatzti, right? Ki savol erespanai, mikesh zos meyachem roschat samirai. Right, it's two more Pasuk after that. Lo so sifo vim lechashav, kitaris tamay li, chodesh vishabas karmikra lo chal matzara. Right, so that whole context is of hollow sacrifice. But Al Pipshat, it's not specifically the Kohanim, it's anybody praying, absolutely. But the Gemara Brachos is going to darshan it otherwise. Which does lead one to think about there's a larger question, which I did not see any of the Rishonim or Achronim talk about, at least in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Beis Yosef, in the Rishonim on this. I didn't see anybody raise the question, are these disqualifications actually midoraisa or only rabbinic in nature? It seems to me that, now, there are two reasons to think it's rabbinic, at least two reasons to think it's rabbinic in nature. Number one, the pasuk in Malachim is a pasuk in Malachim, it's not in the Torah. And thus, even the disqualification from a Kohen from doing service in the temple, after having, let's say, worshipped Avodah Zarah, so we learn things from Psukim in the Torah in order to be scriptural. Things learned typically from the Vim or Ksuvim, from the rest of Tanakh, are generally regarded as asmachta, as a rabbinic law, which hangs its hat on a pasuk, but it's not a real scriptural, not a real din d'oraisa. Number one. Number two, the verse in Malachim is talking about something that is almost certainly rabbinic in nature. If a Kohen only worshipped on a bama and he didn't worship Avodah Zarah, it's clear, I think, from our Gemara and Avodah Zarah that the disqualification from a Kohen who served in the temple of Onai is from ministering, assuming it was not an Avodah Zarah, assuming it was just bringing sacrifices outside the temple. So our Gemara made it very clear it's an Issur Rabbanan and wanted to know, when they made the Gzeira against such priests ministering in the temple, was it only on the Kohanim, the priests themselves, who knew better, or even on the Kalim that were used in the house of the temple of Onias? So it's clear it's only rabbinic in nature, and that's really what this Pasuk is talking about. So it would be very surprising to assume that is scriptural, number one. Number two, so for those two reasons. And the Pasuk in Yeshaya, certainly the Pshat, is not talking about the Duchening, it's talking about Tefillah.
Isn't it in Shmuel, or the Am Mezabchim Mekatrim Babamot? It's over there.
That's not in Shmuel, that's Malachim. Right, so in other words, so it's clear, again, those are La Hashem. That's not Lavo Dezer in most cases.
Were they talking about the time when the Northern Kingdom created their own Bamot?
No, so that every time the Pasuk that he quoted repeats itself over and over in Malachim by the kings of Yehuda, saying that even the ones who were very good, it will say they're very good, Rak HaBamos Lo Saru, Oda Amizabchim Mekatru Bamos. In other words, they did lots, they were really good kings, not all the kings of Judea, but the one thing that continued to happen pretty much down to the time of either Chizkiah was the first one who tried extirpating the Bamos, and Yoshio was the one who seems to have succeeded, was the one thing that people were doing is they were still bringing their sacrifices outside the temple, but the pshat is they were bringing them to Yud Kei Vav Kei, they were bringing them to Hashem, they weren't bringing them to Avodah Zarah. The Northern Kingdom was sacrificing to Avodah Zarah. First the Agolim, first the Eglei Zahav. Well, they had, the question is, they set up two Eglei HaZahav, right? And Yeravam said to them, Eilel Lehecha Yisrael Asher Lucham Eretz Mitzrayim, right? Just like by the Eglei HaZahav, whatever's going on there. And once you get to Omri and Ahav, then Baal becomes, really infiltrates. So Yehu, when he wiped out Ahav's house, seems to mostly, but not completely, gotten rid of the Baal. It's not clear how much it was totally gotten rid of. But so there's certainly a much greater degree of Avodah Zarah in the Northern Kingdom. Maybe not everybody was worshiping Avodah Zarah, but a much greater degree. But in Yehuda, while there certainly were periods in which the Avodah Zarah, the Bamos that are referred to seem to be Bamos Lashem, that violate Shchutei Chutz, but they're not actually Avodah Zarah. I mean, not to say that Shchutei Chutz is a minor prohibition, it's a severe prohibition, but it's not Avodah Zarah either.
In Shmuel, it has Bnei Eli, and they're in Be'er Sheva, and they're performing their Kohanim, and it's about taking the meat.
No, but that's in Shiloh. That's not in Be'er Sheva. That's in Shiloh. They're abusing the people, but that's in Shiloh. That's still they're sacrificing the temple precincts of Shiloh now.
Okay. No. The next thing says Zevach Mishpacha Lanu Ba'ir. The entire idea of Zevach...
But that there was no Mishkan Shiloh anymore. It had been destroyed. So that was the time of Heter Bamos.
But the entire idea of Zevach is it specific to Beit HaMikdash.
No. Zeva. You can bring a korban on a bama b'shas hater bamos. So Shaul's behavior there is...
Store it.
What's that?
Store it. You can only bring in Beit HaMikdash.
What can you only bring?
Store it.
Yes, but there was no...
But Zevach you can
bring on a bama, except for when there's an Isser bamos. Okay. So, within Chazal, though, we first get there are a few sources that are relevant to disqualifying a Kohen from various aspects of Kahuna. The Mishnah that we didn't read, or we did read part of it, in Avodah Zarah, but it's from Menachos, is the following. This first source on the Roman numeral 2. HaKohanim sheshimshu bebeis chonyo, lo yishamshu bemikdash, shebiyushalayim. The Kohanim who ministered in the Temple of Onias are not allowed to serve in the Mikdash. And Kal v'chomer, you don't have to say that l'davar acher, which means Avodah Zarah, meaning priests who ministered to Avodah Zarah are certainly disqualified from serving in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. In other words, if people who only worshipped in the Temple of Onias, and the Mishnah is assuming, yes, the Gemara points out that the Temple of Onias was not idolatry, but it was Shutei Chutz. So if they're disqualified, certainly priests who minister to Avodah Zarah. Shenemar, ach lo yalu konei abamos el mikzbach Hashem b'Yerushalayim, ki em achlu matzos besoch achehem. That's the verse that we read before. Harei elu kiva'a le'mumin, these Kohanim, who had once ministered in the Temple of Onias, and it's assumed the same thing applies to priests who minister to Avodah Zarah, cholken v'ochlin v'lo makriven. They, if they show up to the Beis HaMikdash on their day, they are allowed to receive, they're entitled to a portion of the karban, they eat it, but v'lo makriven. They cannot actually engage in sacrifice. And those they cannot engage in ministering, they're like a balmum. In other words, a balmum can be a physical mum, a physical blemish, and a balmum can be a spiritual blemish. All right. Now, the Gemara in Brachos says the following. I put in very small print, I didn't translate Rabbi Elazar's statement, because Rabbi Elazar says the following. He says that Gedola Tfila Yosem Ena Karbanos Shenemar Lama Li Rav Zivchechem Uksiv Ufarischem Kapechem. So going back to the point I made earlier, Rabbi Elazar is assuming Ufarischem Kapechem is actually a reference to Tfila. Based upon the way he's reading these verses, he reads Ufarisch Kapechem as prayer, which is what the Pshat is. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Kol Kohen Sheharagas Anefesh Lo Yisas Kapov Shenemar Yedechem Damim Maleu. Any Kohen who has spilled the blood, who has killed someone, should not raise his hands, should not dochen. Why? Because Yeshaya says, "Ufarischem kapechem." When you spread your hands out, in any shomea, right? Why? Because yedechem damim aleihem, your hands are full of blood. Now, if I had been reading this stuff in Pipshat, the Gemara al Pipshat, so I would have said, "What kind of murderer is disqualified?"
Bemezid.
That's what I would have said. I would have said Bemezid. We'll return to this, but that's what I would have said. The Yerushalmi seems to take maybe a different approach, maybe not. It says the following. Shalot Tomar, this is in the discussing Birchas Kohanim. Now, one other point I should make. The two sources we saw until now, the Mishnah doesn't speak about a Kohen Duchening. Can a Baal Mum Duchen?
No.
Yes. Unless the mum is in his hands, where people might look at the hands. But let's say a baal mum, you know, and in a place where everybody knows him and they're not surprised, or in a place where everybody has that mum, or in a place where they cover their hands, it's not a problem. There are many, many mumen that a Kohen would have that would not be visible publicly. Nobody would say the Kohen is ever disqualified from duchin those grounds. As a Kohen baal mum cannot do avod on the mikdash, but he is allowed to do to duchin. Right? The only can... What?
Somebody's father here. Lived in Israel, and in one place where he was in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They wouldn't let him do him, I think, and then he went somewhere else.
Yeah.
Pesach or Gibeach, this is in Israel, there's a lot of places that don't allow.
No, but that's not because of mum. That's because we're the Gemara that says that when it talks about mishiyesh la mumin biyadav lo yisas kapav, it's specifically in a way that people are going to look at the Kohen's hands. Right? We don't want someone looking at the Kohen, and because we, you know, again, this tradition that, you know, someone who looks at the Kohen's hands when the duchening is going to be, you know, his vision is going to dim and so on. So that's why a Kohen, you know, who's yadav art tzivuah, house, that they, you know, the dye are in only his hands. If everybody in that town works in dye and all their hands are red, nobody's going to look because everybody's hands are red. So that's but the only disqualification of a mum and a kohen is not because of a mum. Your hands being dyed red is not a mum and the kohen's disqualified. It's all about you don't want the people being mistakel the kohanim. But if not for that, if it's a place in a mum that's b'makom shebeseser, there's no question whatsoever that the kohen, if it's not visible, less man the polling, the kohen can duchen. So it's not, bal mum kohen is not disqualified in principle from duchening. And if that's the case, then it's conceivable that he's that someone who worshipped Avodah Zarah or who served in the temple of Onias, he might be disqualified from Avodah, but he shouldn't be necessarily be disqualified from Duchening. At least the Mishnah and the Gemara doesn't say that at all. On the other hand, when it comes to a Kohen not Duchening because he spilled blood, it is conceivable that he is allowed to serve in the Mikdash. In other words, this is a specific issue about the Ein Kategornas Esanegor, the hands that were the agents of death should not now, it's somehow pasnished, that they should be the agents of blessing. It just doesn't go over well.
Isn't it? But Elazar Kohen actually, the Mezid, killed
Pinchas.
Pinchas.
So the question you have to ask in general in these issues, in other words, if you're willing...
Soldiers.
Correct. That's a shail I think that does come up today. I didn't go looking in the modern Shuvos about that. Correct. Well, that is discussed in Shulchan Aruch, not by a doctor, by a moel. If a moel mauled a child and then the child died. So we'll hopefully we'll get to that at the end. One could argue, I presume that the executioners in Beis Din, who are doing a mitzvah, a mechuyah to do what they're doing, if they were Kohanim, maybe they wouldn't choose Kohanim to do that, are not disqualified. Presumably, there has to at least be the taint of Aveira in it. Right? If it's a mitzvah, I presume that a Kohen is not disqualified from doing so. Okay.
It depends how you would interpret it. Right?
We wouldn't say he did an Aveira. Okay. Right? We might have said that it was like neutral.
Right, so that still could be...
So the truth is, when you look at... even if you want to look at Yeshayahu and argue that this, you know, if you're going to talk Pshat and Yeshayahu outside of the direction of the hands, so argue Yeshayahu is talking about people, the Averos, right? God says, I don't want you in my Mikdash, you and your Karbanos, and I'm not listening to your prayer because you're murderers, right? Even a Rotzeach B'Shogeg is a Rotzeach. It may even be Ba'ones, even when you're Pata from going to our Miklat, you still have the Shem Ritzicha, there's still the taint of spilling of blood. But if it's a mitzvah to do so, or it's mutter to do so, it's hard to imagine that what Shai is talking about. That's true. Al Pidin Torah, they were, yes.
And they certainly wouldn't have been eligible to be...
Who's that?
Kohanim didn't... Shevet Levi didn't go to war.
They would not have been eligible to be the people who chopped the heads off, because that wasn't a particularly useful way to stay away from a mace, so...
Interesting. But you could do that. You could push the guy off the building for Skila.
You have David as a non-Kohen being prevented from building the Beis HaMikdash because...
Correct. Well, that's a right. That's Dama Rosh
Hashanah. No, and there's a mitzvah also. You're supposed to protect him.
Correct.
Did not protect him.
Okay,
but
so you're
still,
right.
But it wasn't optimal. You could still argue it was okay, but it wasn't optimal.
Well, right. God, in other words, there's a difference between saying that God didn't want the Beis HaMikdash built in that way, you know, a one-time building that was going to last for hundreds of years versus saying a Kohen who did the mitzvah of killing someone, you know, is the Skar from Duchening, right? It's hard to imagine a Kohen who steps in as a good Samaritan to save the life of someone who's being pursued and kills the pursuer. You're to say he's the, I mean, you could, but you know, he's mechuyev to do so. He's absolutely obligated to do so. And you can't invoke the exemption of war there, right? That Kohanim are exempt from war. There he's obligated to do so. So, anyway.
Could you argue the same way if somebody was a sinner, that he shouldn't be the vehicle? You know, why restricted to the
hand? So in other words, there's a difference between...
It's coming from God, but...
So again, if you want to talk him in the Midaraisa, I would agree. But there is, you might call it the irony, right? Now that the guy eats chazir, okay, that's very nice. But you know, but the whole what makes Birchas Kohanim different is he extends his hands. And what do you think about when you see his hands? So the Yerushalmi says, Shalotomar ish ploni. You might think to disqualify a Kohen. You shouldn't say, ish ploni megale arayos v'shofech damim v'hum evarchenu. He's an adulterer. He's a murderer, and he's blessing us. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Umi Mivarechecha, Lo Ani Mivarechecha, who's blessing you? I'm the one blessing you. Shenemar, Nisamu Es Shemi Al B'nei Yisrael V'ani Avarechei. So, the Yerushalmi seems to say that a Kohen doing Averis doesn't disqualify him from Duchening. Very much against Rabbi Yochanan's statement in the Bavli. Okay, we're going to come back to that because there's a Machlokas HaRishonim perhaps in how to resolve this. Finally, the Mishnah in Bechara says, the Mishnah is in the seventh parak, talking about the mumin that disqualify an animal from being brought as a carbon, or disqualify, make a Bechor Baal Mum, and the mumin that disqualify a Kohen from doing Avodah, that make a Kohen a Baal Mumin, and they're not all the same. There's a lot of overlap between mumin and animals and people, but there are also differences. So the Mishnah says, "Va'anosei nashim ba'aveira." If a woman, if a kohen marries woman, you know, ba'aveira, woman he's not allowed to marry because he's a kohen, like a grusha. He's not allowed to do avoda until he takes a neder, even if he hasn't divorced her yet. As soon as he takes a neder that binds him to not get hana from her, which means he has no choice but to divorce her, because he certainly can't live with her, he can't sleep with her, he's getting hana from her. Then he's qualified, only then. Bahamatame lemesim, a kohen, it's the simple reading is who habitually defiles himself to the dead. Prosel achiyakabel lav shelo yehi matame lemesim, until he accepts upon himself that he will no longer engage in this practice, the kohen is disqualified. Is disqualified from serving in the mikdash. Right, this is like a mum, but it's a temporary mum. It's a mum that the kohen can actually remove.
So the kohen has a marriage that's not permitted,
right,
and that marriage ends by one or another, then he can go back and do it.
So that's the question, is does he have to take a nether not to get hana still from any woman who is...
Oh, anybody in the future.
Right. The Rishonim say that you don't have to take a nether by Mitame Lemesim because it's not as powerful a Yetzirah. Right? The Yetzirah of Arias is much more powerful. Now, why this Kohen has a fetish woman he's not allowed to marry, I don't know, but maybe it's the allure of the forbidden fruit. Whatever it is. So these are the sources in the Gemara that speak about a Kohen's disqualification. Now, in the latter case, it's usually assumed a Kohen who's no Seinashim Bavera, and not only is can he not do Avoda while he's still married to her, or while he's not sort of bound from, or prohibited from interacting with her anymore, but we don't give that Kohen, we don't treat him with Kedushas Kahuna, which means he doesn't get the first Aliyah, and I believe also we don't let him Dochen. But that's different than the earlier cases, because the person who murdered or the person who worshipped the Zara theoretically is done doing those things. In other words, he's not going to do them anymore. You're talking about a permanent disqualification. That's different than these Kohanim who are really only temporarily disqualified. As long as they're continuing to engage in behavior, to act as if they're not Kohanim, we don't let them do the things that Kohanim do. Once they separate themselves from that particular Avera, they return to their Kahuna in full standing. Okay.
Women Kohanim.
Women Kohanim are not Kohanim.
So the only thing
a female Kohen can do that relates to Kahuna is eat Truma and also eat from the Trumas HaKadashim, the Kachim Kalim stuff that Kohanim get. In other words, meat from a Chatas or an Asham can only be eaten by Zichrei Kahuna, by the males. But let's say the Chazev Ashok from a shlamim, which only a Kohen can eat, it's like it's a hybrid of truma and kachem. Mm-hmm. It's kachem in that you can't be tamei and eat it, and it has to be eaten within a certain area, meaning within the Yerushalayim, it's kachem kalim. Mm-hmm. But a zar cannot eat it, even though a zar can eat kachem kalim normally, because it's also truma. Okay. It's called truma sakadashim. So a chazav ashok, only a Kohen can eat, and his family, his avadim, and his wife, and his daughters, and so on. Mm-hmm. So, but in order to be disqualified from that, generally speaking, the only thing that disqualifies a bas Kohen from eating those things has to do with arayus. If she becomes a halala in one way or another, or zona, then she gets disqualified. But any averas that she do, as far as I know, don't disqualify, because it's not really kahuna. Mm-hmm. Right? It's an appendage of her father or her husband. Okay, so the Rambam writes, Shisha Dvarim, the bottom source, first source of the Roman rule 3. Shisha Dvarim, Monim Nisiyas Kapayim. Halashon, Vahamumin, Vahavera, Vashan, Vayayim, Vatumaseyadayim. I'm not interested in number 1. 4, 5, and 6. I'm only interested in Mumin and Avera. In fact, really, I'm interested in Avera, but they are in some ways related to one another. As we've seen, Kohen, who did an Avera in some cases, might be treated as a Baal Mum. So the Rambam writes in Halacha Gimel, Ha'Avera Ketzad. He goes through each of the 6 disqualifications and explains them. Ha'Avera Ketzad, Kohen Shaharagas Anefesh, Afal Pish Asa Tshuva, Lo Yises Kapa, a Kohen who kills somebody, even though he did tshuva, he's still not allowed to dochen. Shenemar Yedeichem Damim Alei Uksivu B'Farishchem Kapechem. Okay.
So that's, does that apply only to Mazen? Or?
So he doesn't state explicitly. I think that the reading of the Rambam typically is assumed to be doesn't make a difference.
What kind of tshuva do you do if it's been shogeg?
Somebody was right, exactly. You have the case of where it wasn't even a shogeg.
No. So I'm going to argue the following.
It was a rogue day where you're obligated, as you said, to kill.
He says,
so I'm going to argue. I would argue the Rambam doesn't say explicitly, but based upon simple logic and the fact and the source in the pasuk that any time the kohen kills when he's mitzuvah to kill, that it doesn't disqualify him from ministering. What I would say is that a kohen, remember that if you kill b'shogeg, that is considered ritzicha. It is ritzicha that by right you should be put to death for, because the only way to atone for blood spilled is with the blood of the person who spilled it. But the Torah had rachmanis upon the person who kills b'shogeg and allowed him to flee to the Ari Miklat and protect him. But in the same way that the Torah says that you're not allowed to take a kofar for someone who killed intentionally, a ransom, to let him off, you're also not allowed to take a kofar for someone who killed b'shogeg, who had to flee to the Ir Miklat, in order to let him out of the Ir Miklat. And if he leaves the Ir Miklat, the Gaal Adam's allowed to kill him, which means, in principle, he's chayiv misa. And the Torah had a kula here, had a special leniency. And Rashi points this out in Sanhedrin, on Daf Samach Aleph. Rashi points out that really someone who kills b'shogeg, in principle, should be put to death. Doesn't matter. It's very foreign to the way we think. The truth is, the entire, I would have mentioned it at the end, but now that we're talking about it, the entire mode here seems very strange to the Western mind. In other words, a Kohen who does something b'shogeg, and does tshuva, or does tshuva, you would think, okay, he did tshuva, done. But, in other words, he did the crime, did the time, now you should be free. So some states don't let felons vote, so I never quite understood how that's okay, but nonetheless, outside of that, generally we assume the person, did his time, especially if it was not intentional. If it was not intentional, it was b'shogeg, so nobody seems the person should be disqualified. But the Torah says otherwise. In other words, there is a notion that sin leaves a stain. In the same way the Torah talks about the reason why you have to kill the murderers is because it defiles the land. Ki hadam hu yacha nifes aretz. It's not something that's in the contemporary Western lexicon. The idea that something becomes defiled merely because of sin, and even b'shogeg, right? In other words, some sins are so great that they leave, in effect, a permanent stain. In this particular case, what the halacha is stating, whether it's the Reis or the Rabbanon, is that a Kohen who was killed, and maybe, it wasn't on purpose, it was b'shogeg, that act of murder, and I assume it has to be an act of murder, not a mitzvah, that act of murder leaves an indelible stain on the coin, and that's the way it is. We're not taking stones and want to kill him, but nonetheless, it still has an impact. And some may go further, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, not only if a coin kills b'shogeg, but even if he kills ba'ones, in a way that it's a shogeg, but it's close enough to ones that he doesn't even have to go to Ir Miklat. That too may constitute a ritzicha b'shogeg that you don't need Ir Miklat for, but nonetheless, it's something that Lee, a Kohen who has contributed, we would say, to the loss, this is a good way to formulate, to the shortening of an innocent life, so that leaves an indelible stain, right? When you kill a Rodef, when you kill in war, it's not an innocent life by definition that you're killing.
So it would be the same thing for the Goel Adam? The Kohen was a Goel Adam?
So the Goel Adam, the question is whether it's a mitzvah or whether it's a reshus. If it's a reshus, it may be like Pinchas. There's a very interesting Mishnah Lamelech at the beginning of the Rambam, Hilchos Ratzeach Shemir Snefesh, who talks about whether the Goel Adam, if you hold the Goel Adam as a reshus, not a mitzvah, is the murderer allowed to turn around and kill the Goel Adam? Because the Gemara says by Pinchas, had Zimri turned around and killed Pinchas, he would have been pater. In other words, Pinchas wasn't the rodef that anybody else could have stopped him, but if Zimri had turned around and killed him in self-defense, Zimri would have been exempt. Yeah, that's another interesting shir, but not for now.
So the Goel Adam is in the gray zone.
I think so, yeah.
So there's a logic to all this, right? Because it's really, aside from the avodah, the duchening, the Kohen can or can't do, it's establishing, it's raising the standard and establishing a model, really, for the rest of...
Yeah, except for the problem is that that model is very...
How different would be today if we had that standard?
The problem is that it's holding up the Kalanim as a standard for everybody else, is that it's limited to two very narrow prohibitions. In other words, we don't say a Kohen who eats in treifa restaurants regularly is disqualified from duchening. And he's not.
Did they do that then?
I mean, I don't know whether Kohanim went to Nevelis and Trevis. I don't think they had restaurants then, but the point is that, in other words, he could have been Ochel Nevelis and Trevis, and yet it doesn't disqualify him.
Doesn't affect society around him. It's
Okay, I don't know. I think that Avodah Zarah and I think that Avodah Zarah.
That's Avodah Zarah is contagious. A murderous population is contagious.
Well, but I would argue that all forms of behavior are contagious, right? In other words, that's what contemporary, you know, behavioral psychologists would argue, that all forms of behavior, you know, are contagious, right? You know, they say that people whose friends and whose relatives you live with are heavier, they tend to be heavier also, and lighter, right? And as people are impacted by everything that goes around them, so
alcohol.
What's that?
Smoking alcohol.
Alcohol, right. In other words, I think all behavior around you normalizes it. So I'm not sure that those two, why they're specifically. I think that one of the things you find in the Torah about those two, they're not the only things, but I'm not sure anything besides Arayos. I've been thinking about this, having had the chance to work it out. In other words, I think these are the things that actually defile the land. In other words, Mahalos Asuros defile the person, but these three things, I don't know why Gilai Arayos is not here, but these three things, Avodah Zarah, Gilai Arayos, and Shefichas Damim, actually defile the land. At least it stayed on the land, then it has to be expunged. And in the same sense, it seems at least two of these three things leave an indelible stain on the Kohen. So the Rambam then says, the Kohen she'ovad kochavim, bein ba'ones bein b'shkaga. If a Kohen worshipped Avodah Zarah, whether he was forced to, whether he did it by mistake, afal pi shasa tshuva, eina nosei eskapa l'olam shanema ach lo yalu kohen abamos. So the chiddush of the Rambam here is that he has extended serving in the mikdash to duchening, right? That doesn't say in the Gemara, right? That pasuk's only talking about doing avodah. Ubircha ubracha ka avodah hi shenamar the shara sol v'orech b'shmo. So that hekesh exists, but we don't make that hekesh for everything. Right? We don't say that a baal mum is not allowed to duchen, even though there's a hekesh between the shara sol u'levarech b'shmo. Right? A baal mum cannot do shayrus, but he's allowed to do bracha. V'chein kohen shehemir la'akum. If a kohen apostatized, aval pi shechaza bo eino noseis kapal olam. It's not clear what the Rambam is changing here. In other words, he just said someone who worshipped Avodah Zarah. So it may be what the Rambam here means, that even if you didn't actually worship, if you apostatized without actually having yet performed the rites of Avodah Zarah, you are still disqualified. U'shar ha'veiros, the Rambam says, any other ha'veiros ein monim. And then he writes in halach above, Kohen shalohaya lo davar mikol elu advar mamon in the siyas kapayim, avo pishenu chacham ve'ino medaktik b'mitzvos. Any Kohen who doesn't have one of these disqualifiers, and among them are just the two averos, even though he's not a chacham, and he's not medaktik in mitzvos, o shohu abrios meraninim acharam, people murmur about him, o shalohaya masal matano b'tzedek, or he's not honest, hareze no siyas kapav, he can dochen, ve'in modunoso. Why? Now, you might have said, if he's dishonest in business, he's a terrible role model, which he is. But why shouldn't it disqualify from duchin? The Rambam says, "Lafish is mitzvah saseh al kohen to kohen sheroy l'nesias kapayim." Any kohen who is able to duchin is a mitzvah saseh. Ve'ein omer la'adam rasha hosif resha v'himane men amitzvahs. Just because you've done multiple averes doesn't mean you should add one more aver to the bile. And the Rambam says, "Ve'al tisma v'tomar matoa birchas hedyotze." You'll say, "Who needs such a bracha?" She'ein kibul abracha tali b'kohanim ela b'kadosh baruch hu she'emar v'samu eshemi al b'nei Yisrael ani yivarachem. Ha'kohanim osa mitzvasan she'nitztabuva, the kohanim do what they're told to do, v'kadosh baruch hu b'racham and b'varech es Yisrael k'cheftza. Now, what is the basis of these last two halachos in the Rambam? What's his source? A kohen can duchen, we know. A kohen do the Avodah Zarah can duchen, we know is based upon the Mishnah Menachos, and the Rambam makes the hekesh between Sheirus and Bracha. A Kohen who spilled blood can't duchen, that's the Gemara and Brachos. Where does the Rambam come up with this idea from? What's his source? The Yerushalmi.
No.
So it explains to you, how is the Rambam reading the Yerushalmi not in contradiction with the Bavli? And so some of the Mefarshim explain. If the people were murmuring about a person, and they said, you know, Ish ploni megali rais v'shofech damen. How does the Rambam understand that? Ha'am miraninim acharav. And it's not that he actually did these things, but that's what people, the rumors are about him. The rumors are he works for the mafia, you know, he's rubbed a few people out. Nobody has evidence to that. So you might say the rumors he's a womanizer, right? So the Rambam says those things, unless you've established for a fact that he's either a murderer or that he's been over the Zara, it doesn't disqualify him. And you'll say, ah, but even if he's not mamish a murderer, right? In other words, when the smoke, even if there's no fire, the smoke, he's a Russia, right? He's a shady character. So the Rambam says that's not your job. The Kohen does his mitzvah. God will do his job, and that's fine. So this is the position of the Rambam. As you can imagine, there are benefits and there are downsides. The downsides, yes, Larry? The downsides are highlighted in the Tshuva of Rabbeinu Gershom. Remember Rabbeinu Gershom? I don't know that he was a Kohen, but he supposedly did have a son who apostatized. Rabbeinu Gershom was asked the following. There are actually two contradictory Tshuvas in Rabbeinu Gershom. The first Tshuva, he says the following. First line. Utshuva l'shoali al esa kohen sh'nishtamed v'asa tshuva. Imroi lisa kapa v'likros b'torah rishon olo. Can he dochen and get the first aliyah? Kach dati note, sh'afo pi shechata, even though he sinned, kevan sh'asa tshuva, roi lalos l'duchan v'lisa kapa. He is roi to dochen and to get the first aliyah. The afal gav d'chsevi kidash tol l'chol davar sheve kedusha. Even though the basis of giving the first aliyah is the pasuk of kidashto, v'zeh kevon shenishtameid chilel kedushaso, he defiled his kedusha when he apostatized. Kevon shechazar chazar bel kedushaso v'lo pakal kedushase. The kedusha comes back. It hasn't disappeared. Shenemar, ach lo yalu konei abamosa mizbach Hashem b'Yerushalayim ki machlu matzos besoch achehem. Utran hasam harei hein kevalei mumen, cholken v'ochlen. We say that a Kohen who worshipped Avodah Zarah, worshipped Tzchut Eichutz in the Temple of Onias, can eat Kachem again, because he has Kedusha. He's like a Baal Mum, u'balei mumen, Kedusha yesh b'hem. Shilmalei ein b'hem Kedusha, mucholalem heim, if they had no Kedusha, heich ochlen v'cholken b'trumen v'kachem kadashim. How can they eat these foods? Elapshita kedusha yeshbam v'areim kohan bali mumen v'asur mizona v'chalala. Right, we wouldn't say such a kohen shmads, and he does tshuva. We wouldn't say he's allowed to marry a grusha now because he has no kedusha kahuna. He's allowed to go to cemeteries because he has no kedusha kahuna. No, v'asur mizona v'chalala v'asur litami lemesim k'shem shebali mumen asurim. A kohen is a bal mum, cannot do avodah the mikdash. He can eat kachim, he can eat truma. He's not allowed to marry grusha or a zona. He's not allowed to go to a cemetery because he has kedusha kahuna. A chalal, does a Kohen who's born from the union of his father, a Kohen, let's say a Grusha, he's not a Kohen. He's a chalal. He has no Kedushas Kuna. He can go to cemeteries. He cannot eat any kachim that only a Kohen can eat. He can marry anyone that a regular Israel can marry. But a Kohen who worships the Avodah Zarah, he's like a Baal Mum. But a Baal Mum is a Kohen. V'roi lisa kapav kimo balei mumen sha'af al pi sheyesh b'hem mumen nosenes kapeyem. Even though a Baal Mum has a mum, he still knows say kapav v'hu kayotze b'noses kapav v'kori rishon b'torah. So Rabbeinu Gershom says, and this would seem to make sense, if a Kohen sha'avad avodah zarah is like a Baal Mum, then like anything a Baal Mum can do, he can do. Anything a Baal Mum can't do, he can't do. Now, why does he insist? She'iyata umer kach. Am I tani areim kevalei mumen? Nisnei nifsalim min akahuna? Why don't you say that they're like balei mumen? Say they're disqualified from takuna. Ela shvamina detanan tanan udlo tanan lo tanan. That which the Mishnah said they can't do anything else they can do. Hilkach, he goes through other stuff. Ein lanu raya lo men amikra velo la Mishnah leposlo. Ela sheyesh lo siyua men amikra o Mishnah shlo leposlo. There's evidence why you shouldn't pass such a Kohen. It's very interesting evidence. Dichsiv velo sonu ishes amiso. You shouldn't emotionally afflict someone, another Jew. Behonas dvarim akasa medaber. It's talking about onas dvarim, not onas mamon. Ketzad im haya bal tshuva leim elo zechor masech harishonim. Someone's about tshuva, you should never remind them about their sins. Vim tomar lo yala lo duchen malikra b'torah tchila ein lechonah gedol mizeh. If you don't let them duchen or get the first aliyah, there's no greater onah than that. V'od nimtzes ata merapa yedem shal bali tshuva. You're going to undermine bali tshuva. They're going to come. Why should I book bali tshuva? Basically, they're going to treat me as an outcast. Interestingly enough, in the next tshuva, he was asked about a kohen shenishtamed, reading in the Torah first, and he basically says he's not roi to duchan to read in the Torah tchila, but he says, if you look at the second line, mnei shehora la'avodah zarah, v'zeh hu shimusha. Some have suggested, to resolve the contradiction, that the second tshuva is talking about someone who shmadid and became a priest. But in the first tshuva, he's talking about someone who didn't go that far. Maybe someone, it's not clear, someone who was nishtamed because of ones, or even if it wasn't ones, maybe if he didn't, you know, go the whole, get all the way to the end zone and become a priest. But this is the position of Rabbeinu Gershom. He doesn't talk about, I should have put additional sources here, about the spilling of blood. But if you look on the Rambam in the Hagos Maimonius was written by a Talmud, one of the four students of the Maharam Rittenberg. I think Rabbeinu Hillel was the author of the Agos Maimonides. And there, what he does on the Rambam is he quotes all the Ashkenazi Rishonim, especially sometimes they agree, but often when they disagree with the Rambam. So there he quotes a Rabia and others, Rabbeinu Simcha, who say that they looked at the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Bavli speaks about a murderer disqualified. The Yerushalmi says, you shouldn't say that so-and-so is Megal Arayis, he's a Shofech Damim, and he's blessing me, but rather you accept the blessing. So we said that the Rambam resolves the contradiction by stating that the Yerushalmi is talking about someone who's rumored to do so, but there's no evidence, and did actually do so. Some say, the Aruch HaShulchan assumes for a moment, that's a machlokas between Bavli and Yerushalmi, you just pasuk like the Bavli. The Rambam also, I might have said that that's the Rambam's position, except for the Rambam does quote the Yerushalmi, and he quotes it with a certain angle. But Rabbeinu Simcha and the Rav Yos say no. They say that the Yerushalmi is talking about someone who's a habitual spiller of blood. He's not a guy who killed once, b'mezid b'shogeg. He's someone who is a shofech damim, not just stam, someone who murdered someone. He's someone, in theory, if he's megal arayos regularly. But a person killed once, or killed maybe a couple times, he did tshuva, so that's not disqualified based upon the Gemara Brachos. So if you go to, so it's a machlokas harishonim on this issue. How much to extend the Mishnah and Menachos by Avodah Zarah? Do you extend that to Duchening? That's a machlokas, the Rambam and Rabbeinu Gershom. Although Rabbeinu Gershom seems to extend it by a priest. And then the question of murder is also a machlokas between the Rambam and some of Chachmei Ashkenaz as to whether or not, if someone murdered once, whether or not that actually disqualifies him, or maybe even Rabbi Yochanan is only talking about someone who is a habitual murderer. In Shulchan Aruch, it says the following, the last sheet. Kohen shaharagas anefesh, afilu b'shogeg, lo yises kapav, afilu asa tshuva. That's the position of the Rambam. But the Rambam says, v'yesh omrim d'masa tshuva no se kapav, v'yesh lohakel abali tshuva, shelo linol delas b'fnehem. You shouldn't look to be machmer by bali tshuva, because otherwise you're going to be noel delas b'fnei tshuva, because they'll say, why bother? V'halchinog, so says the Rambam. That's the minhag. Multinokumes, no says kapav. The Mechaber says if someone circumcises a child and the child dies, he can be no says kapav. Even if the people are kvetching about him that he's a murderous fellow, kevin shlo nisbar hadavar, since it's not clear that he murdered, he says kapav. It's not a problem. Now, some want to say, I don't want to go there. The Achronim want to read, it might be pshat, that these are two separate things. Multinekumes no says kapav, because he's A, trying to do a mitzvah, and we have no idea that he actually caused the child's death. The second thing has nothing to do with the mila, has to stam. You have a guy, this is the Rambam, you have a guy who they're rumored, people say, he's working for, I've heard he rubbed out a bunch of fellows. So that has nothing to do with the mal. In other words, it's two separate issues. Two separate people who have some connection to murder, neither is treated as a murder. One, because we don't hold them responsible, the mal, the one who circumcised Hinoch, and the second, because we don't actually know that he was a murderer. Okay. In Lamed Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch says, Mumar lavodos elilim, lo yisas kapav. V'yishomim shem asa tshuva no se kapav, v'chein ikar. V'yim nenas, the divrei akol no se kapav. If he was nenas, if he was forced, then everybody agrees he's no se kapav. The Achronim point out this is a problematic passage, because the Rambam explicitly says, even if he was nenas. Okay? But the Mechaber himself at least accepts that if you're nenas by avodas kochavim, no says kapav. This, as you might imagine, could have been very, very important for the Maranos. Right? An issue that the Mechaber would have been distinctly sensitive to, because if I'm not mistaken, the whole controversy of the reinstitution of smicha and svat in the 16th century, where first they gave smicha, they were mechadish the smicha based upon the Rambam and the Perusha Mishnayis and Bechoros, and they gave smicha to the Mari Bei Rav, who was the Beis Yosef's Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Karo's Rebbe, and then he gave smicha to a bunch of his Talmidim. The reason they wanted to reinstitute the smicha, supposedly, was because they wanted to give Malkos, real Malkos, to the Maranos, so that they could pater them from the kares of having shemadet to Avodah Zarah. Because if someone is chay malkus and they get malkus for the avera, they become niftar according to one sheet in the Gemara from the kares. So that's why they reinstituted the smicha. So as you can imagine, Rav Yosef Karo would have been very, very sensitive to the needs and the sensitivities of the conversos. I think that which we would actually call them, the conversos. Morano is not a nice word. Okay. And then the Mechaber says, "Lo hiv dvarim mehanmonim nisias kapayim, afal pishen medakdek b'mitzvos v'chol am aranim acharav no seis kapav." And the Rama adds, "Shein shar averos monim nisias kapayim." No other averos are actually prevent nisias kapayim. Of course, in Sif Mem, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Kohen shenasa grusha lo yisa kapav, ve'noagim bo kedusha afilo likros b'torah rishon." If a kohen is married to a grusha, he can't tuchen. He cannot get the first aliyah. And Mishnah B'choros said, obviously, he can't do avodah. But that's, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about, because that's not halacha l'maisa b'zmanaseh. V'afilu girsha omesa, even if he divorced her or she died, pasol atche yidar hana al das rabim me'anash shu asabahem. And totally takes a neder that's basically irrevocable. I don't want to go into what kind of neder this is. He's not allowed to do this stuff, because we're afraid he'll go, he's got a thing, he's got a fetish for grushas. So, and totally takes a neder not to get hana from any of the women from whom a Kohen is prohibited to marry. He's not allowed to do these things. Nitma lemes in Sif Mem Aleph, the last thing. She'enu mishiva meisei mitzvah, pasul min haduchan v'chomalos kahuna, ad she'yashir v'yikabel sh'leitame od lemesim. That's what the Mechaber says, as we would expect, following the Mishnah Mechoros. V'yesh omim adds the Ramah, this is very interesting. The mishiyesh lo ba she'mir al vodas kochavim. O she'zinsa e mechayven o lekacho ki aviyah hi mechalalas. This is very, very interesting. The Ramah quotes a tradition from the Mordechai here, that a Kohen who had a daughter who shmadid, so the Torah says, Uvas ish Kohen ki sechel is nos, esavio hi mechalales ba ish tisaref. So the Ramah says, if the daughter shmadid or she was mezana, the father is no longer, we don't have to give the father the first ali anymore, because she desecrated the kedusha of her father's house, esavio hi mechalales, and therefore there's no mitzvah v'kidasho by the Kohen anymore. It's very difficult on one level, because in other words, esavia hi mechaleles, I mean, the svara behind it is that the father is responsible because he raised this child. But we know that sometimes that's not the case. What's interesting in particular about this din is the Achronim point out, both the Mishnah Berurah and HaShulchan, is this din really doesn't belong here. This din doesn't apply to Duchening. This is a din only in Kriyas HaTorah, in the Aliyah Rishon. I think they say you can give the Kohen the first Aliyah, you're just not mechuyev to. The Vekidashto no longer applies. But this does not at all disqualify a Kohen from Duchening, so it really shouldn't have been in this Siman, which is one of the Simanim on the Siyas Kapayim. It should have been probably later, where they talk about Kriyas HaTorah, Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah, which follows, you know, a number of Simanim later in the Shulchan Aruch. So anyway, the bottom line is, there is a Machlokas HaRishonim. The psak of the Mechaber is that if a Kohen murders someone, and it doesn't make a difference whether it's a bemezid or b'shogeg, but I assume not when it's a mitzvah, then the Kohen is disqualified from Duchening. The Ramah says if he does tshuva, he's no says kapav. I'd imagine, again, I haven't looked, I'm sure there are tshuvas on this,